Yeah, so as I was saying, we're picking up here in chapter six, and in the first five chapters, we've been going through and just looking at those five principal offerings, you know, the burnt offering, that really represented a consecrated life. We were looking at the meal offering that was really an offering of thanksgiving, and having to do with service. We looked at the peace offering, which really looked at communion. And we also looked at the sin offering and the trespass offering. And we just sort of talked also about how all of those sort of relate to one another, how they fit with one another, and how they all are pointing to Jesus, you know, pointing to the ultimate sacrifice, which is Jesus Christ. And so it really has been a blessing as we've been going along to kind of look at these things and to look at how all of these things do, in fact, relate to Christ. The other thing that is that we've talked about is just the very title of the book being Leviticus, that it really relates to the Levites, right? It's really like a manual for the Levitical priesthood. And it's an important book for us because it really does deal with holiness, and it deals with, again, pointing to Christ and all that he is, and how his one sacrifice that wrapped up in all of that are all of the things that were provided with these various sacrifices. But the other thing that we can't lose sight of is you know, what it speaks of in the New Testament, you know, in Peter, in his writings in particular, you know, he talks about how we are, you know, a royal priesthood. And that's a reality, you know, that the Lord in what he's done for us, in all the many things that he's done for us that are described for us in the Word. The one thing, you know, that we have to remember is that we are priests as well. And so being able to really look at the way in which the Lord instructed the priesthood here could be really instructive for us today as well, right? In terms of, you know, how we are to be holy, you know, just as the Lord is holy. And, you know, and so it's just, to me, it's really a blessing to go through this book. So today we're going to, what we're going to be looking at is, there is a piece, you know, we left off at the end of chapter five, and you know, as we've gone through the word, we've seen in many cases where, you know, the end of a chapter is not always the end of a thought or the end of a discussion of a particular subject. So there's a few verses here in the first part of chapter six that really also connects to that last offering that we looked at, which is the trespass offering. So we're going to cover that first. And then after that, one of the things that we'll see beginning in verse 9 of chapter 6 is that, actually it's verse 8 and 9, but where the Lord is speaking to Moses and he's saying, command Aaron, right? And so what we're going to see is that what we've covered from chapters 1 through 5 is where the Lord was talking to Moses and telling him to instruct the people, you know, about these various sacrifices. But then beginning here in verse 9 of chapter 6, this is kind of from the vantage point of the priest, you know, the kind of the instructions to the priests on these various sacrifices as to sort of what they're to do and so forth. So we get a little bit more background on these various offerings, what took place, you know, what the priest was required to do. And so that's what we'll be looking at in chapters 6 and 7. And so let's just start out with chapter 6. And again, we're looking at kind of the balance of that discussion regarding the trespass offering. So chapter 6 of Leviticus verse 1 reads, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, if a person sins and commits a trespass against the Lord by lying to his neighbor about what was delivered to him for safekeeping, or about a pledge, or about a robbery, or if he has extorted from his neighbor, or if he has found what was lost and lies concerning it, and swears falsely concerning and swears falsely in any one of these things that a man may do in which he sins, then it shall be, because he has sinned and is guilty, that he shall restore what he has stolen, or the thing which he has extorted, or what was delivered to him for safekeeping, and or the lost thing which he found, or all that about which he has sworn falsely, he shall restore its full value, add one fifth more to it, and give it to whomever it belongs on the day of his trespass offering." And so here we see, this command that the Lord is giving regarding trespasses, and we can see here that this is really talking about, the commandment against stealing. And it's really interesting because you can see that within that very simple command, thou shall not steal was the simple command. But we can see here that there are all these different ways in which a person can commit that sin. And so it really does give us a picture into the fact that, for the commandments, there's some depth to it, right? And we saw that with Jesus when he was talking to the people, to the scribes and the Pharisees, and saying, you've heard that it has been written, that you shall not commit adultery. But, I tell you that he who looks upon a woman with lust in his heart, he has already committed adultery. So that kind of gives us a, insight into the fact that there is more than just sort of that technical word, just that one thing. And so in this case, we can see that this law against stealing, built within that law are all these other things, lying to your neighbor about what was delivered for safekeeping, right? So there could be a situation where your neighbor, says, "Hey, can you hang on to this for me?" Or whatever the case is. And if you were to take and you were to lie about that, to say, you would take it for yourself, or you would sell it, or something like that, or maybe you destroyed it either intentionally or unintentionally, but then you would lie and say, "You never gave me anything. I don't remember that," or you would say that something happened that didn't happen about it. That is stealing, basically. It talks about, something that was given as a pledge, like maybe you made a loan to someone and they gave you this property as a pledge. Again, if you lied about it. The other, here it talks about robbery. That would be like kind of the obvious kind of stealing, right? But the point is there are all these different ways in which you can steal. We see in the next clause this word extorted, which is some kind of a taking that is accomplished through trickery, right? You're somehow deceiving somebody. And so again, we get those two points. One is there are many different ways, and even like this one thing that I think is really important is, like it says, or if he has found something that's lost and he lies concerning it. I mean, imagine that, like someone loses something of value and there's an uproar, like, oh my gosh, you know, I lost my, you know, my wedding ring or something like that, and everybody's looking for it and everything, and you knew you found it, and you're just silent, you're just standing there and watching everybody, and you're like, oh wow, what a shame, right? That is sin, right? That is like stealing, you know. So we can see that this is, we can learn a lot about this in terms of holiness, right? Because the Lord is calling us to a very high calling, right? And we should understand that in looking at this, that even this, even though, you know, the Lord has taken it and he's, you know, kind of broken it down and provided more detail, that even this isn't an exhaustive list, right? It would even extend to, like, let's say you go to the grocery store and you pay for something and they give you too much change back, or they don't charge you for something and you notice that they didn't charge you for something you bought. You know, God expects for you to say, wait a minute, you know, this cost, you know, $20, you know, cost $15. I gave you a 20 and you gave me back a 10. You know, you gave me too much money. Here's it back, you know. Or even if you go outside and you notice that, you know, at the bottom of your basket, there's something there that you didn't pay for, right? And even if it's inconvenient, right, you go, oh, I'm already in the parking lot, I don't want to go back. You know, the Lord, he expects that of us, right? That we would, you know, go back and say, wait a minute, you know, I had some water or whatever it was in the bottom of the basket, you didn't charge me for it, let me pay for it. But in any event, so we have that aspect, right, that to understand that there are all these different ways. The other aspect is just the idea that the Lord, in putting together this list, you get a real sense that the Lord really knows what we're like, right? He knows what we're made of. He knows what we're capable of, you know? And so it's really amazing when it's all said and done, when we get to the end here with this trespass offering, just to know that, yes, the Lord knows what we're capable of, but he also, his sacrifice, you know, he's made provision to deal with all of these different things, right, that we're capable of and we're guilty of. And so that's really a blessing. But as part of this, though, we see another principle at work, which is really powerful and really important. And that is this idea here where he talks about restoring something, like that there would be some kind of restitution. And this is tremendously important, because really what it shows us is that God is not only interested in you making things right as between you and him, but he's also interested in us making things right between ourselves, right? And that's, you know, this also kind of points back to that important truth, you know, when the man came to Jesus and said, you know, what's the most important commandment, you know, and he said, well, you know, it's to love the Lord with all your heart, you know, basically everything that's within you, you know. So in other words, that relationship between you and God. But then he said the second is like the first. You know, he didn't even ask about the second, but the Lord gave him a bonus, right? He said, you know, the second is like the first, and that is to love your neighbor as yourself. And so we see in here that the Lord is not only interested in us addressing the sin between us and God, but also addressing the sin between us and our fellow man. And so he says that you know, because he has sinned and he is guilty in this way, that he is required to restore actually what he has stolen. And it goes on into verse 5 to say that not only does he restore the full value of what he's taken, but he's to add a fifth more to it. And so we have that sort of that principle at work, like I said, making it right with your fellow man. But also the other point is that it really does, it is a true demonstration of contrition, right? That you really are, you have a godly sorrow, right? That you would go and you would make it right. And then the other thing that is so valuable here that I've kind of pointed out as we've gone along is, you know, the Lord provides the restitution amount, right? Which is really important, because you can really feel bad about something, right? Go, man, I stole that from that person and I feel really bad about it. I want to do something that is God honoring. I want to do something that would be sufficient. And so you may not know, right? Or maybe the other person could actually take advantage of you because you're feeling so guilty and say, hey, well, why don't you just give me like your house, or why don't you give me your children, or give me your wife or something? You know what I mean? But the thing that's so beautiful is that the Lord provides, he says, if you restore the full value of what you've taken plus 20% more, or one fifth, then that is sufficient restoration. So it's kind of that's kind of a blessed thing that you have this commandment from God, where you know that when you comply with it, that you're right with him. But the other thing that we can see, though, that's interesting is that, in my view, is whenever you have something that is in the Old Testament that has kind of been pulled forward, right? And so there's a principle that Jesus pulled forward, I think, that's very similar to what's taking place here. And that is in Matthew chapter 5, verse 24. And this is where, you know, Jesus says, he says, if you bring your gift to the altar, and then when you're there at the altar, you remember that your brother has something against you, that you should leave your gift at the altar and go your way and first be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer the gift. And so what Jesus is communicating there is that you know, you can't be right with God. You know, you can't be there offering this gift on the altar without also making your wrong right with your fellow man. And the thing that's interesting about what Jesus says here that is always probably perplexing to people if you read it carefully is that he says that you're there at the altar and you're offering your gift. And he says that you remember that your brother has something against you. It's not that you have something against them or whatever. Like it could be like even that they're wrong thinking, you know, like they have something that you should go and try to reconcile, you know, just try to work it out. Like, I get, based upon what you said, you know, I get the sense that you have a problem with this thing. I don't want there to be anything between the two of us. Let's talk this out. Let's work this out, right? You know, the Lord's basically saying that, you know, that is important, you know, for your relationship with him, right? That we have, you know, we reconcile with our fellow man as well. And so that is really it's really interesting, just the way that the kind of the parallel here of this restoration piece, and it's something to really stop and think about, that you know, when you have certain things that we're asking the Lord for forgiveness about, that if there is a way in which we have in our sin harmed someone else, that we should seek to make that right as between us and them. And then it goes on in verse 6, and in a very natural way, it just says, and he shall bring his trespass offering to the Lord, a ram without blemish from the flock, with your valuation as a trespass offering to the priest. So the priest shall make atonement for him before the Lord, and he shall be forgiven for any one of these things that he may have done in which he trespasses. And so this is really interesting here that, you know, if the person complies with what is being spoken here and they go before the priest, it says, and they bring the required offering along with the valuation, that it says that there is this assurance, really, right? It says, and he shall be forgiven. There is assurance of forgiveness for, you know, the sins that they committed, as well as, you know, the guiltiness, right? Their guilty conscience that they would have from having done what they've done. And it's important to remember that, you know, the Lord's sacrifice, you know, and what he's provided for us is not only forgiveness of sin, but also, you know, he takes away that guilt as well. And he addresses that as well. And it says, you know, they'll be forgiven. It says for any one of these, and this is what I was getting at before. It's not like we say, well, you know, he can, you know, with this offering and with him complying, you know, he can deal with the, you know, the robbery and the false statements or whatever, but he can't deal with, you know, one of these other things. It's like any one of these things would be dealt with through this sacrifice. And, you know, we have the New Testament version of this would be, you know, 1 John chapter 1, verse 9. I'm going to read that. I'm sure you're all familiar with it, but it's nice to read it. 1 John 1, 9 says, well, actually, let's look at verse 8. It says, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. But verse 9 says, if we confess our sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. And so, you know, again, that's, in my view, that's the New Testament version of that. You know, we confess our sin, he's faithful and he is just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So now when we get to verse 8 here, again, this is now we're turning to the Lord now providing instructions to Aaron as the high priest and his sons, you know, as to all these different offerings, right? So he's going to take them and again, just provide some more detail concerning them. So verse 8 says, then the Lord spoke to Moses saying, command Aaron and his son saying, this is the law of the burnt offering. The burnt offering shall be on the hearth upon the altar all night until morning, and the fire of the altar shall be kept burning on it. And the priest shall put on his linen garment and his linen trousers. He shall put on his body and take up the ashes of the burnt offering, which the fire is consumed on the altar, and he shall put them before beside the altar. So the first point here is in verse 9, where it says, the law of the burnt offering, that the burnt offering shall be on the hearth upon the altar all night until morning, and the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. And there are two things that we can really see in this. One of them is that, you know, this burnt offering, it was burning continually, you know, so the priests were responsible. They had to just stay up all night long, basically, and, you know, have, you know, different watches basically to make sure that this this kept burning. And there's a lot of symbolism here, but one of the things that, you know, you can say, you know, we talked about, you know, well, what is the burnt offering all about, right? It is a offering of consecration. Like you're saying, I want to live a consecrated life to you, Lord. And, you know, when you make that decision, when you decide that you want to do that, that is something that you endure. You know, that this offering that they put on the altar here, it was to be burned completely and thoroughly, but with all that was there, you know, the meat and the fat and everything, it took a while to burn. And so we have to understand that, you know, if we were desiring to live a consecrated life, it's not just something that you just do, like, you know, for a day or a week or something like that. It's something that is enduring. And, you know, to me, it's just a reminder of that, you know, that, you know, sometimes we can get really fired up for the Lord and we give ourselves to the Lord. And then, you know, after a period of time, we kind of fizzle out. And that's just, it's a normal thing that, you know, we kind of have those ebbs and flows. But the idea here, you know, is just really a reminder that, you know, that if, you know, we are desiring to live that kind of life, it is something where we have to endure the heat of that, you know, for a long time. That zeal that we have, you know, the Lord, you know, he desires that we would keep that zeal going, you know, keep that that desire to give our all to him going, basically. And it also points, of course, to Christ, right? That he never loses his commitment, you know, towards us, right? And even today, you know, we know that he is forever making intercessions for us, right? But it is just kind of an important concept that, it, you know, it's going to be repeated here as well. And then in verse 10, when it's talking about here that the priests, they put on their linen garment and their linen and trousers when they're taking up the ashes. And so here they are before the Lord, and they're here before the altar, and they're doing this work. And the idea is that, you know, it's not a common thing that they are doing. And so they are to put on the garments that are sanctified, and basically they're set apart for the work that they're doing before the Lord. And so they're to wear the linen garments, you know, that have been provided for that purpose. But then in verse 11, it says, then he shall take off his garment and put on other garments and carry the ashes outside the camp to a clean place. And so we see that when they go outside of the camp, that they would then take the garments off, because, you know, they're, again, these garments are holy. They're set apart for that purpose there in the tabernacle. And so they're not to be common. They're not to be used for something that is profane. And it's interesting, that word profane, it sounds like, you know, something horrible, like, you know, that's kind of how we've come to understand the word profane, but that word profane just simply means common, you know. And so they're not to be taking the linen garments, you know, those garments that the Lord consecrated and sanctified for the use there in the tabernacle, and just be, you know, just doing whatever, you know, going about their lives or about their business, or doing things that are common. And so that's why when they go outside the camp, they're to take off those garments and put on other garments. And then verse 12, again, it's, you know, reiterating the fact that the altar for a burnt offering, you know, it's to be kept burning. So verse 12 says, and the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not be put out And the priest shall burn wood on it every morning and lay the burnt offering in order on it. And he shall burn on it the fat of the peace offerings. And a fire shall always be burning on the altar. It shall never go out. And so it really, like I said, it underscores that continual burning. And there's something else about that you could say is you know, that continual burning. It's speaking both of the human condition as well as God's grace, right? That we have this problem, right? This human condition of like we're constantly, you know, in sinning, right? And constantly in need of God's forgiveness and his grace, and that his grace is always, you know, covering, you know, it's kind of like what Paul talks about in Romans, right? That as you know, our sin abounds, you know, God's grace abounds as well. And it never goes away. It never goes out. It's always there to do the work that is needed, you know, that grace. So there are a lot of things that can be said about, you know, kind of what the continual burning really represents. Verse 14 says, this is the law of the grain offering. So now he's going to provide some additional instructions to Aaron and his sons regarding the grain offering. It says, the sons of Aaron shall offer it on the altar before the Lord. He shall take from it his handful of the fine flour of the grain offering with its oil and all the frankincense which is on the grain offering, and shall burn it on the altar for a sweet aroma as a memorial to the Lord. And we saw that in chapter 2. And the remainder of it, Aaron and his sons shall eat with unleavened bread. It shall be eaten in a holy place in the court of the tabernacle of meeting. They shall eat it. And so it really just speaks of what they're to do. And this is really, you know, every time where you see where the priests eat, you know, a portion of the sacrifice, it's a reminder to us of how the Levites, you know, when they go into the land, you know, they're not going to be provided with a portion of land, and so this is how the Lord provides for the priests is to provide some of the sacrifices to provide their food and so forth. Verse 17, it shall not be baked with leaven. I have given it as their portion of my offerings made by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the trespass offering. Verse 18, all the males among the children of Aaron may eat it. It shall be a statute forever in your generations concerning the offerings made by fire to the Lord. Everyone who touches them must be holy. Verse 19, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is the offering of Aaron and his sons, which they shall offer to the Lord beginning on the day when he is anointed, 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour as a daily grain offering, half of it in the morning and half of it at night. It shall be made in a pan with oil when it is mixed. You shall bring it in, the baked pieces of the grain offering you shall offer for a sweet aroma to the Lord. The priest from among his sons who is anointed in his place shall offer it. It is a statute forever to the Lord. It shall be wholly burned. For every grain offering for the priest shall be wholly burned. It shall not be eaten. Also, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to Aaron and to his son, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. And so now we're going to get to the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is killed, the sin offering shall be killed before the Lord. It is most holy. The priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. In a holy place it shall be Eden, in the court of the tabernacle of meeting. Everyone who touches its flesh must be holy, and when its blood is sprinkled on any garment, you shall wash that on which it was sprinkled in a holy place. And so, you know, the blood that gets onto the garments that they were wearing, they were to wash that off. They weren't to just leave that there, because that blood is for a particular purpose, and so they're to remove it from the garment if it were to get onto there. And then in verse 28, it says, "But the earthen vessel in which it is boiled shall be broken. And if it is boiled in a bronze pot, it shall be both scoured and rinsed in water." And so here we see a distinction between an earthen vessel and a bronze pot. And there are some various reasons offered for why it's been dealt with in different ways. You know, one is that, you know, an earthen vessel is porous, and so you wouldn't be able to remove, you know, that blood fully by just merely rinsing it off. I think a better understanding, though, is that, you know, the bronze pot is has already been tempered by fire, so it's already been judged, and then it also has the, you know, that quality where you have the ability to scour it and rinse it and clean it off, you know, whereas the earthen vessel, you don't have that ability to do so. But in any event, he provides instructions of what to do, you know, when, you know, this blood gets onto these vessels and these pots and so forth, what they're to do with them. And, you know, one of the things that I read too is that, you know, that anything that's touched by the meat or the blood really required that there be this special cleaning that would take place, because it was thought that the blood was really infected by the sin of the one who brought it, you know, because, you know, that, remember, that sort of that transference of the sin of the person onto the sacrifice itself. So there are a lot of different things to be said about all of this. Verse 29 and 30, it says, "All the males among the priests may eat it. It is most holy, but no sin offering from which any of the blood is brought into the tabernacle of meeting to make atonement in the holy place shall be eaten. It shall be burned in the fire." And so if you recall in chapter 4, there was a distinction between the various sin offerings, right? There was like sort of the sin offering for the priest. There's a sin offering in the case that all of Israel sinned. There was a sin offering for a ruler, and there's a sin offering for the common person. And essentially here in verse 30, what it's saying is that the sin offering for the priest or for the nation, you know, for Israel, that was not to be eaten, but the sin offering that was brought by a ruler or a common person, they were to be eaten. So that's what is being discussed there in verse 30. Well, let's continue on a little bit here into chapter 7, see how far we can go. Chapter 7 now is talking about the trespass offering. So verse 1 says, "Likewise, this is the law of the trespass offering. It is most holy." And of course, you know, the trespass offering is dealing with what we call, like, when a person unlawfully crosses a boundary, right, that the Lord has set up, you know, just in the same way that today there's a law of trespass, right? Trespass to land, like you go onto somebody's property, you've crossed over their boundary. So the same idea that actually the our concept of trespass comes from this, right? You're going beyond the boundary that the Lord said you should go across, right? And so here you know that there's something that is sinful, that you're not to go there, right? But you go there anyway, that's a trespass. And so verse 2, it says, in the place where they kill the burnt offering, they shall kill the trespass offering, and its blood he shall sprinkle all around the altar, and he shall offer from it all its fat, the fat tail and the fat that covers the entrails, the two kidneys and the fat that is on them by the flanks, and the fatty lobes attached to the liver above the kidneys, he shall remove, and the priest shall burn them on the altar as an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a trespass offering. Every male among the priests may eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. The trespass offering is like the sin offering. There is one law for them both. The priest who makes atonement with it shall have it. And so it's really talking about, how this, it talks about how these offerings that the priests would be permitted to eat it, but it's telling which priest, right? So it's saying the one who is involved with, ministering with this person who's brought this offering to be offered, that's the one who would have this this to eat, he and his family. Verse 8 says, and the priest who offers anyone's burnt offering, that priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has offered. Verse 9, also every grain offering that is baked in the oven and all that is prepared in the covered pan or in a pan shall be the priest who offers it. Every grain offering, whether mixed with oil or dry, shall belong to all the sons of Aaron, to one as much as the other. So really you see here in these verses here, just how they were to divide up, the offerings that would belong to the priests, like sort of how would they know which priest, would get these different things. And so that's, it's explaining that, with regard to these offerings, how it works. And then verse 10, this one here about this grain offering, it's saying that one then gets distributed kind of equally amongst all of the sons of Aaron. Verse 11, this is the law of the sacrifice of peace offerings, which he shall offer to the Lord. If he offers it for a thanksgiving, then he shall offer with the sacrifice of thanksgiving unleavened cakes mixed with oil, leavened wafers and anointed with oil, or cakes of blended flour mixed with oil. Besides the cakes as his offering, he shall offer leavened bread with the sacrifice of thanksgiving of his peace offering. So all of, both of these we covered already in chapter 2. And verse 14, and from it he shall offer one cake from each offering as a heave offering to the Lord. It shall belong to the priest who sprinkles the blood of the peace offering. Verse 15, the flesh of the sacrifice of his peace offering for thanksgiving shall be eaten the same day as offered. He shall not leave any of it until morning. But if the sacrifice of his offering is a vow or a voluntary offering, it shall be eaten the same day that he offers his sacrifice, but on the next day the remainder of it also may be eaten. The remainder of the flesh of the sacrifice on the third day must be burned with fire. And so here we know that in these times, obviously, they didn't have refrigeration, right? And so, it talks about how they had they had the first 2 days within which to eat this this offering, but if any remained on the third day, it would not be eaten. And so that makes a lot of sense. You know, as you read this, and you can't help but think about Christ, right, and his sacrifice, and how you know, he was he rose on the third day. You know, the Lord did not allow him to experience, you know, corruption, right? So as I look at this, you know, I can't help but see that kind of parallel, right? That this it would be on that third day when it would really begin to be corrupt, right? And that's why, you know, they burned it. And so, you know, I'm looking at that, and if, you know, if it's, you know, what we've been saying is true, right, that all these things are pointing to Christ, that seems to make sense to me as we're reading that. Verse 19, the flesh that touches any unclean thing shall not be eaten. It shall be burned with fire. And as for the clean flesh, all who are clean may eat of it. But the person who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord while he is unclean, that person shall be cut off from his people. And so it was important that was ever, you know, eating of this sacrifice, that they would be clean, right? Otherwise, the Lord didn't want that person, you know, an unclean person to be eating of this sacrifice. He wanted everything to be followed, as he said, and if not, they were to be cut off. So it was a very serious thing that he's talking about here. Verse 21, moreover, the person who touches any unclean thing, such as human uncleanliness, an unclean animal, or any abominable unclean thing, and who eats the flesh of the sacrifice of the peace offering that belongs to the Lord, that person shall be cut off from his people. You know, the other point that really should be made here, and it's probably the principal point, is that, you know, when you're, you know, again, we were looking at those various sacrifices, right? That you have the trespass and the sin offering. And I talked about how, you know, you make those offerings, and then now you have the ability to then go ahead and have peace with God, right? And offer the peace offering and to be thankful for that and have that, enter into communion with the Lord. And so the point is that, you know, you know, if you're, you have to deal with that sin before you can then be in that relationship of peace and communion with God. And so there can't be any uncleanliness there. You can't skip, you know, you can't short circuit and go and have peace and fellowship and communion with God. You've got to deal with that sin. You can't have that, any sin or any uncleanliness there. And so the Lord, in these extreme things that he is saying here about being cut off from the people, it's important. He's wanting to make sure that people understand that principle, that there, you can't have communion and fellowship and peace with God and be unclean or have not dealt with or addressed that sin. It's very important. Verse 22, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, you shall not eat of any fat of ox or sheep or goat, and the fat of an animal that dies naturally, and the fat of what is torn by wild beasts may be used in any other way, but you shall by no means eat it. For whoever eats of the fat of the animal of which men offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, that person who eats it shall be cut off from his people. Again, very extreme thing going on. We've talked about how that fat belongs to the Lord. You know, that fat was to represent the best part of the meat, right? And so we're to give the best, and we're making a sacrifice. We're giving the best. And so if a person were to eat of that, they would be cut off. They're violating the Lord, you know, they're violating his law and what he is requiring. And they're taking what belongs to him. One thing we see in verse 24, there is some case here of what if there is an animal that just dies naturally, you know, they just drop dead or there's roadkill or whatever. He's saying that, you know, you could use that fat, right? You couldn't bring an offering. You couldn't use that animal for an offering, but there are ways in which they use fat, right, for different purposes. Like they use fat for fuel, you know, like if they're, you know, to burn things, or they could use fat like to, in like if they're making, you know, like if they're working with leather, fat could help to make the leather softer and stuff like that. So they're saying, you know, you could, it says the fat of which is torn by wild beast, it may be used in any other way. Like you can use it in other ways, but you may by no means eat it. You know, the Lord doesn't want them to be eating a roadkill and stuff like that. Then it goes on, verse 26, moreover, you shall not eat any blood in any of your dwellings, whether of bird or beast. Whoever eats any blood, that person shall be cut off from his people. And so, you know, this was something that was very, very important, that they're not to eat any blood. Those two things we actually covered last week, you know, where the Lord says, can't eat fat, can't eat meat. I mean, you can't eat blood. And, you know, even that was carried forward into the New Testament, really, where it talked about how, you know, in the early church, you know, when you brought in the Gentiles and they were now coming into fellowship with the Jews, and those Gentiles had their pagan practices of, you know, strangling, you know, they would kill their animals in a way so that they can keep the blood in them, so that they can have, you know, when they had their steak or whatever, it would have all the blood and it was juicy and everything else. And they probably had other pagan reasons as well. But, you know, the instruction that was given there was, you know, that they were, you know, that would be one of the things that they shouldn't do. You know, now they've come to Christ and they're now fellowshipping with the Jews, you know, in a way to not be offensive or what have you, but they were not to eat of meat that was offered to idols or that was strangled, you know, so that, you know, it had the blood. But, you know, there, you know, in every culture, right, just about, you know, there's some kind of food, right, that is made with blood, you know, and for me, I have no temptation to eat things that are made of blood. But this is just another thing that, you know, the blood was really sacred. We know that is the way that sin is dealt with, is with the blood. And so the Lord wanted it to be clear that this was something that was not to be eaten, and just like the fat was not to be eaten. See here. You know, I think I'm going to stop here. There are a few more things to cover here, and we're about at the end of our time here. So we will pick up next week, and we'll just cover the balance of this, and then we're going to get into, in chapter 8, what we're going to get into, which is really interesting, is that in the same way that, you know, back in Exodus, the Lord spoke to Moses, and he told Moses about how they were to, you know, consecrate and sanctify the priests. And here is where they're actually going to do that. So we're going to get to kind of go through that in chapter 8.